नमो विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदांत स्वामीति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषा शून्यवादी पाश्चात्य देशकारिणे नमो महाविदन्याय कृष्णप्रेमाप्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्णचैतन्यानाम्ने गौरहक्षे नमः पञ्चतत्त्वात्मकं कृष्णं भक्तरूपस्वरूपकं भक्तावतारं भक्ताख्यं नमामि भक्तशक्तिकं हे कृष्णा करुणा सिंधु दीनबन्धु जगत्पते गोपेशा गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानो सुते देवी प्रणमामि हरि प्रिय वांचा कल्पत्रुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत जगदाधार श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंदा हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्णा हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे Once again, welcome. So, we are into the fourth day of this seminar series, Journey of Self-Discovery. So far we have discussed the search for happiness. Then we discussed if we really want to find the real happiness, we have to go to the root cause. The cause of all causes. So we need to search out who is the cause of all causes. And then, does God really exist? If we scientifically, logically understand the existence of God, the next question comes, who is God? In every religion, every culture, there is some acceptance of God, some belief in God. Who is God? In Hinduism, we say there are many gods, 33 crore Devi Devata. So, who is God? Is there one God or many God? So, we discussed all that systematically with the reference from scriptures. And the answer was, the scriptural reference, the scriptural authority, it shows Krishna is the Supreme Lord. So, there is one God, there are many Devi Devatas. And what is the relationship between the Supreme Lord and all these Devi Devatas? They are the representative of the Supreme Lord to manage the affairs of this universal government. So we discussed all that. And next question today, which we are going to discuss is, after understanding who is God, the next question is, who am I? What is my real identity? PowerPoint is not working. Just excuse me 1 minute.
I think just maximize that from there only, Prabhu.
when I go to the PowerPoint mode.
The slideshow mode, it's not working, right? It's looking for a second monitor, it looks like.
Okay, let's do one thing. I have to restart my computer. And then, till then, we can just go over without PowerPoint.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
So in the very first session, we discussed the human form of life. The purpose is to inquire. Athato brahma jikyasa. So one should inquire. So what type of inquiry one should have? Not where is my food, where is my shelter, where is my clothing. All those inquiries are okay for our daily sustenance. But the real inquiry should be, I am searching for happiness, but why the misery is imposed upon me? As if by force. Who am I? What is the purpose of my life? What is all this cosmic manifestation around me? What is my role in this? So the very basic question is, first of all, who am I? What is my real identity? So when this question comes, if I ask you this question, who you are? Everybody may give maybe different answers. If I ask Prabhu who you are, so he will say, I'm Sanjeeva, I'm from India, I am a CA engineer, I work for this company, I have two kids, I have this, I have that. So we give all those identification as this is who am I. Right? So everybody comes up with their own identification in that way. But in real sense, who am I? What is my real identity? In the sense, am I this body? Are you your body? Are you this hand, this face, this head, this whole body, your coat, your shirt, your pant, who you are? Are you your body? Then going forward, going next, are you your mind? Sometimes people relate with mind. Oh, I am my mind. I have so many thoughts coming all the time. So maybe I am this mind. So are you the body? Are you the mind? Who you are? This body is made of bone and flesh and blood. So are you the blood and flesh, the bones? The mind has so many thoughts. Are you just a thought which is flickering all the time? So who we really are? And unless we know our identity, there is no way we can move forward in life. Why the identification is so important? First of all, everybody agrees identification is important or no? It's important. Anywhere you go, they will ask you, show your identification. Show me who you are. Tell me who you are. Most of people from here, from India or some other country, immigrants in USA. So when you came into US, as soon as you land from the plane, you are sent into the immigration clearance line. And what they ask you? Show me your identity. Who you are. Give me your passport. Give me your visa. Who you are. Why you are here. What is your purpose here? What do you want to do here? So unless you know this thing, who you are, unless you show your identification, you are not, you cannot enter into this country. Same way, suppose somebody pushes you inside the office. Go work. What will you tell? First tell me who am I in this office? What is my role here? Am I the CEO of this company? Am I the engineer? Am I the technician? Am I the peon? Who am I? So unless you know who you are, what is your role in that office, in that company, you cannot work, you cannot do anything. So identification is very important. In some communist countries, you have to carry your identification in the sense of your driver's license or your passport all the time. Police can stop you anytime and ask you, show me who you are. If you don't carry your identification, you may be put into jail. So identification is very important. So first point to understand is, who am I? What is my identification? Now, how do we understand our identification? Who am I? So we are doing as a crash course in Bhagavad Gita. So we are using references from scriptures. And when Krishna started speaking Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, when Arjuna was put into bewilderment before the start of war, this Kurukshetra war, Arjuna did not want to fight. He did not want to perform his authorized duty as a Kshatriya, because he said, I don't want to kill my relatives. If I will fight, I have to kill all these people assembled here. It will incur sinful reaction. So he refused to fight, and at that time he surrendered to Krishna. I am completely bewildered of my duty. You guide me. You instruct me. And as soon as he accepted Krishna as his teacher, before that he was talking to Krishna as a friend. They were both as friends. But as soon as Arjuna accepted Krishna as his teacher, not the friend, Shishyasteham Shadima, now I am your disciple, surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. So Krishna immediately took the role of a teacher, role of a guru, and started instructing. And what is the first instruction Krishna gives? Let me see if it works now.
The plug.
So the first instruction Krishna gives is, you are not this body. You are the spirit soul. Now for some people, in today's time, if you tell somebody, you are not this body, you are the soul, and people will have many questions. Oh, who is soul? What is soul? How does soul look like? I don't believe in soul. Can you prove the existence of soul? Can you show me the soul? So people will have many different questions. So at that time, when Krishna spoke to Arjuna, all these principles were implied. Soul, reincarnation, God, karma. So all these principles, these were inherited principles. These were, people had complete faith, complete belief in this. In today's time, when we discuss these things, when we discuss about Atma, soul, or God, who is God, there is karma principle or reincarnation principle. So people don't have any belief, any faith in that. First, we have to bring people to a basic level of understanding. To bring up to that level, so from where they can start understanding. I don't think it's going to work for
me. Prabhu, you can put it in a PowerPoint and then...
Let's see. You definitely want the...
No, it's okay, Prabhu. You have prepared the slides.
It was there before this.
Yeah. Somehow when he's going into the slideshow mode, it's not showing up there.
Prabhu, do you have green monitor?
Yes. No.
Yeah. Okay, Prabhu.
Okay, let's see.
Close on the left side, yes. And then just slide that thing, yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. It's a little hard to navigate.
Okay. If you have a dual monitor, you can close the program altogether and then open it again. It should come up to...
I don't have dual monitor.
Not in your office at Abbas.
No,
office.
I can't use the dual monitor.
So then I think it should work.
I don't know why it's not working for us. Anyways. So when Krishna started speaking, the first instruction he gave was, you are not the body, you are the soul. Because understanding our real identification is very important, first of all. Without knowing who we are, there is no way you can do anything in life, anything constructive, anything positive in life. So I only gave these examples. But again, the question will come, as I just said, people don't have belief in existence of soul. People will ask all these questions. Show me the proof of existence of God, of soul. As we did two sessions back, proof of existence of God. So what is the proof of existence of soul? Is there any logical, scientific proof to prove the existence of soul? So let's go one by one into different logical and scientific proof for the existence of soul. So first proof for the existence of soul is common sense. Common sense also, which is not very common these days. So what is the common sense thing, first of all? When somebody dies, what do we say generally?
Soul rest in peace.
May your soul rest in peace. Okay, soul left the body. Okay, this is somebody who believes in soul. Some other phrases people use. Mr. Such and Such passed away. Or he left his body. Or he is gone. So people in everyday, day-to-day life, we use these phrases. Mr. Such and Such passed away. So if we are this body, if we are not something, not nothing different, just this body, then when somebody dies, that body is still lying there. So then who has passed away? Who has left the body? It means there is something else in the body which has left now, because of the absence of which now the body is declared dead, is considered dead. So that is first common sense thing. Another common sense thing, when we say eyes see, so who is seeing? Is the eye who is seeing? When you eat, is the mouth which is eating? When you hear, is the ear is hearing? When you touch, is this the hand, this particular skin which is touching? So who is functioning? When you say I see, and you see you through your eyes, so is this eye which sees, or who sees through the eye? For example, when you are looking into the binocular, okay? So when you are looking through the binocular, is this the binocular which is seeing, or is that you looking through the binocular? Is this the binocular itself which is seeing? So is somebody using that binocular as an instrument and he is seeing through that? So same way, when we see through the eye, hear through our ears, eat through your mouth, touch through your hands and skin, who is actually doing that function? Because if the eye sees, if the ears hear, then all these instruments are still there in the body. When the body is dead, all these instruments are still there. Actually, when somebody dies, somebody passes away, his eyes become even bigger, opens up wider. So it means that person should see even more now. But that person is not able to see, hear, eat, touch anything, experience anything. So who is experiencing? There is something in the body which is using these as a facility, as an instrument to do the particular function. Another common sense thing, when you raise your hand, everybody raise your hand, what do you say? What do you say? Who? What is this?
Hi.
What do you say?
High five.
My hand. You can say high five also. So you say my hand. You point to your face, you say my face, my head, my hair, my shirt, my coat, my pant, my body. Isn't it? Do you say I hand, I face, I head, I hair, I body? Now there are many terms, I terms. iPhone, iPad, iCar. Not talking about that. So when you refer to yourself, any part of your body, you say my hand, my body. So this hand belongs to me. This body belongs to me. So there is something else in the body who is occupying this body. So that also proves that there is something different from the body which is residing in the body. As there is a dress is covering for the body, so same way this body itself is a covering for the resident of this body. So there are two words used, deha and dehi. Deha means the body and dehi means who resides in the body. Like a apartment and a tenant in that apartment. So this apartment belongs to the person living in that apartment. So same way, there is deha and dehi. There is somebody residing, occupying into this body, who owns this body. Another common sense proof for existence of soul is the presence of consciousness. So we have some consciousness within us because of which we can feel. You can sense something. If somebody punches you, somebody hits you, you will feel the pain. Right? So that experience, that pain or pleasure is because of the presence of consciousness. And the consciousness is because of the presence of soul. Now because of this presence of consciousness, we can have all this sensation. And this consciousness flows through the blood in the body. So this is also described how the consciousness is spread throughout the body. As somebody takes a medicine and the effect of medicine spreads throughout the body, so same way, because of the presence of soul, the consciousness is spread throughout the body through the medium of blood. So wherever you have blood flowing, you will have the sensation there. But wherever there is no blood, you have no sensation. So that's why when you cut your nails, so when your nails grow, you cut your nails, do you feel the pain cutting off that nail? Or when your hairs grow and you go to the barber, barber cuts your hair, does your hair cry, "Oh, please don't cut me, I'm feeling the pain"? So the hairs, the nails, because there is no flow of blood, there is no presence of consciousness, so there is no sensation. But the same nail, if you rip it apart from the skin, now will you have the sensation, feeling of pain? Right? And same if somebody pulls your hair from the skin, will you feel the pain? Because the skin has the flow of blood coming to that, and because of that the consciousness is present and you feel the sensation there. So the presence of consciousness also is the proof of existence of soul. And in the dead body, so a live person, when a person is live, he has this sensation. So if you are sitting here, now this floor is dead, but you are live. This floor does not have any sensation, no consciousness, as no matter how long you are sitting on this floor is not going to cry, "Oh, I'm so tired now, please get up." This chair, this sofa is not going to cry, "Please get up, I'm so tired now." But suppose your child come and sit into your lap. He is sitting in your lap for 1 hour, half an hour, and you will start feeling some problem. "Please get up, sit on the side now, I'm tired." Isn't it? So because as a living person we have consciousness, but a dead person, now in a dead person, you pull his skin, you slap the person, he's not going to cry anything, or he's not going to say, "Oh, I'm feeling this pain, please don't do this thing." Because in the dead body there is no consciousness. What is the difference in living body and dead body? The absence of soul. So living body, sorry, the dead matter plus living entity, the spirit soul, is equal to living body or living person. So you take the soul out, the person becomes dead, there is no consciousness. So this is the common sense proof, which we terminologies we use in day in, day out. But after this common sense, which is, as I said, not very common, people may not understand this common sense thing, is there any other scientific proof for the existence of soul? Anybody has heard of out-of-body experience or near-death experience? So there are so many scientific studies these days. One is called OBE, out-of-body experience. And the another one is NDE, near-death experience. So what is that is, a person, the soul comes out of the body and living in the ether, the soul can witness whatever is happening outside. So there are so many studies like that. For example, once the doctor is performing a surgery on a patient. So the patient is under complete anesthesia. So he is, in medical sense, he is not conscious. He is completely unconscious. He does not feel anything. And once the surgery is done, this person start kind of rebuking the doctor, chastising the doctor. "Oh, I was such in a miserable, painful situation. I was fighting for life and death. And you guys, while you were operating on me, you were talking about football, you watched the match something, or you went to the golf, playing the golf. So you guys were discussing all that, taking it so casually. And outside there were so many kids playing, there's so much noise coming, so many cars were passing by. So he started describing all that. And the doctors were surprised. How can he describe all those details? He is supposed to be completely in unconscious state. His mind is completely inactive. So if they track the mind sensations on the screen, it's complete flat. There is no sensation there. So how can somebody tell all those details? And there are so many studies like that which shows out-of-body experience. So the soul comes out of the body, staying in the ether, is able to see everything happening in that realm. And then it can describe. So same with near-death experience. Somebody described that, oh, I was almost dead and I saw this big light and this, that. And he comes back and describes. So this is near-death experience or out-of-body experience. And the another one, another proof for existence of soul is past life memories. There are so many cases, so many studies done where somebody has reported as a past life memories that, oh, in my previous life I was such and such person, used to live in such and such place. And those are not like somebody tells a story and somebody will just believe it. There are thousands of proper research studies documented after doing conducting the research, not just accepting whatever person described. So there is a doctor called Dr. Stevenson Carlins. He has done more than 2000 studies, 2000 recorded cases of past life memories. So there is one case here. A child start describing, he is just 5-6 years old, and he start describing, oh, I used to live in this and such village. Start telling the name of his village. And I had my wife and kids, and he want to go there. So the people, parents take it to the doctor, and after agreement, the doctor says, let's take him in a train without informing him and let's see what he does. So as the train passes by, as stops at the particular junction of his previous life village, the child recognizes and he gets down from the train, starts walking. And as he goes inside, he sees a shop. He goes to the shopkeeper, asks him, you remember there was a person with this name? And he owed you this many rupees. So the person looks into his account book. And he says, yes, there was this person and he owed me these many rupees. So he further goes inside and he goes in front of a house. Claims, oh, this was my house. He enters into that house. There is a picture hanging there with an elderly person, 60 year old, with a woman and a few other 30-40 years kids. 30-40 years old kids, people there. So he says, see, that is my picture. I am that person and this is my wife and these are my kids. So he record all that, or he kind of explain all those details. And after, with the whole research, those kind of cases are recorded as where person remembers his previous life details. Same way there is another case, a girl, 6-year-old girl named Minu, she remembers her past life. And as she is growing up, first of all, these kids start speaking completely different language, which they have never learned in this particular life. So all of a sudden they started speaking completely different language. And then this girl, she start telling, oh, I used to live in that village and I have my husband. So she started telling the name, the details, and they go to that particular village, find that person, invite that person at their home. As he comes, she recognizes, oh, he is my husband. And she prepares the dishes, saying he likes these particular dishes. And actually it happened that that person agrees that, yes, these are my favorite dishes. So like that. So past life memories is another proof where it shows that we are not this body, we are something beyond this body, which continues its existence after this body is finished. So like that, these are the proof for existence of the soul, or let's say at proof of something beyond this body. Even if something doesn't understand what is soul as of now, at least one can come to this understanding, we are not this body, there is something which continues. We are beyond this body. So, the question comes that, okay, if we are not this body, then what is this in front of me? What is this sitting in front of me, this 5 feet, 6 feet tall? What we describe this entity as? So, this is as a gross body, the scriptures define, Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explained, this gross body is made up of 8 material elements. So, 3 gross elements, 5 gross elements and 3 subtle elements. There is a sthul sharira and suksham sharira. Sthul means gross. So, the gross material elements. And there are 5 gross elements. So, everybody, even if you ask a middle school child, he knows what are the 5 material elements. What are the 5 elements? Anybody? What are the 5 material elements? It's written there on the screen. So, earth, water, fire, air, ether. So, these are the 5 gross material elements. So, this body is made up of these 5 gross elements. Now, earth. Do we have the earth element in us? When the body dies, when you burn the body, this body becomes what? Ashes. So it mixes into earth. So we have the earth element. This body is made up of earth. Then water. Do we have water element? Actually, science says the 70% of this body is made of water. And because of the presence of water, there is a blood flowing in the body. Otherwise, there cannot be any leak or the blood flowing. So we have water element. Then fire. Do we have fire in our body? Right? We have fire inside the body. Can you believe that? So why are you not burning? Why this fire is not burning you? So there is a fire inside the body. That's why your body maintains its temperature. So your temperature is fixed at what, 98.4, which is considered as a normal temperature. If the fire inside the body becomes higher, your temperature of the body goes high. So you've got fever. If the fire becomes dim, it means your body temperature drops down. So when somebody dies, what happens is the body temperature, this fire, turns off. When the soul leaves the body, this fire turns off, the temperature starts dropping. So a dead body will be cold. So this fire inside the body, it's maintaining the body temperature. It's like a thermostat in your body. And then there is a fire in your stomach called Jatharagni. Because of this fire, we can digest the food. If that fire is not there, we are not able to digest the food. Sometimes people say, I have a digestion problem. Because the digestion fire is dim. Mandagni. The Sanskrit word uses Mandagni. The fire, the digestion fire is dim. So we have fire element in the body. Then air. Do we have air in the body? So we have 5 type of air actually in the body, because of which we are able to breathe. We are able to, the yawning, when the yawning comes, that is also because of air. When we have a more bad air in the body, which leads to yawning. So yawning, breathing, all that happens because of presence of air. Otherwise you will not be breathing. And then ether, space. So we have ether in the body. Otherwise, the sound will not come out. We will not be able to speak. So this body is made up of this 5 gross element. And then beyond that, there are 3 subtle elements. And what are these subtle elements? Mind, intelligence and false ego. So the gross element is which you can see. Okay, which you can see or which you can feel or touch or smell or taste. That is gross. Subtle is which you cannot see with your material senses. So mind, intelligence and false ego. And Krishna described this in Bhagavad Gita, that this body is made up of 8 different elements. Bhumi rapo nalo vayu kham mano buddhi revacha ahankar ityam me bhinna prakriti ashtada. So this material body is made up of 8 elements. Bhumi, which is earth, apo, Air, Nala, Vayu, Kama is ether, Mana, Buddhi, Ahankar. So mind, intelligence and Ahankar, false ego. So our body is made up of this. Now what is mind? In scientific terms, sometimes it is, people cannot differentiate between mind and intelligence. They say it's one and same thing. And the close entity we can relate it to is the brain. We'll think this brain which is there, if you open the skull, inside the skull there is brain. And in the brain there is a grey matter and white matter. As a scientific term. And people think intelligence depends on the grey matter. Based on the scientific terminology again, more the grey matter means you have more intelligence, more IQ. So the intelligence is related to the brain, or the mind and intelligence combined together is related to brain or the grey matter. But based on the scriptural terminology, there are two different entities, mind and intelligence. And what are the function of mind and intelligence? How we differentiate mind and intelligence? This thinking, feeling, willing, this is the function of mind. Whatever you think, you feel or you desire, that comes from the mind. So thinking, willing, feeling is the function of mind. And intelligence is, the function of intelligence is to differentiate, discriminate, to choose between right and wrong. And then there is another function of decision making. Who makes the decision? Is the mind which makes decision, or is this the intelligence which makes decision? If intelligence makes decision, then our decision has to be every time right. Because intelligence is which can differentiate between right and wrong. So if intelligence makes a decision, it means all your decision every time should be right. Do you make every time right decisions? Anybody has made wrong decisions in their life? Most of time. But today you made a right decision to come here. So the function of mind is thinking, willing, feeling. Function of intelligence is to discriminate, to differentiate between right and wrong. And who makes decision is whichever is stronger between the two. If your mind becomes stronger, the mind controls. If you make your intelligence stronger, then your intelligence controls. It can tell you, no, you should not do this, you should do this. And you can, after this session, from now onwards itself, now you can start listening to these different entities. Sometime you get this thought in the mind, oh, I should do this. Then you can hear another voice, no, you should not do this. Rather you do this. So your intelligence is trying to tell, but sometimes we end up doing the wrong thing. Because whichever is stronger, that will make the final decision. So like that, there is a proverb, inside us we have two dogs barking, the good dog and the bad dog. And who wins? Whom you feed the more. So like that, there is mind and intelligence which are trying to control, trying to guide you, to tell you. But who will control, who will make the decision finally, who will push you to one side or other side? Whom we sharpen the more, whom we feed the more. Now, what is this mind? Anybody has experience with mind? We use the word mana. So mind means man. Man is not your heart, by the way. People think, mera man nahi kar raha hai, matlab mera dil nahi kar raha hai kaam karne ko. It's not your heart, it's your mind which is telling you. When you say, oh, I don't feel like doing this thing today. So your mind is telling you in different ways. It's always bombarding with different thoughts. Every second you have thousands of thoughts. Is it true or false? Either you are in present or past, or sorry, future. Either you are in the past or in the future. Rarely you stay in the present. It's like a, what do you call that swing?
Pendulum.
So it's going on one side or other side, either past or future, past or future, either it's lamenting for the past or hankering for the future. So always there are so many thoughts. And if you sit down and list down all those thoughts which come in your mind, you will be ashamed of yourself, or all of us will be ashamed of ourselves. What kind of thoughts come in the mind? And if you tell your thoughts to your neighbor, he will not let you come inside his house. So mind is always bombarding with different thoughts. Once, one person, he did a lot of austerities. He did austerities to please Narad Muni. People do austerities to please Shivaji, Brahma, Lord Vishnu, something. And this person, he did a lot of austerities to please Narad Muni. And finally Narad Muni appeared. Okay, please tell me, what do you want? Why you are trying to please me? He says, I want some wealth. Narad Muni said, I am a sannyasi, a traveling monk. I don't have anything. I have only one dress and one kamandalu and this veena. How can I give you any wealth? Then he said, oh, then you are a very good friend with Kuvera. Kuvera is the demigod of wealth. So if you cannot give me anything, please write a letter, recommendation letter to Kuvera for me, that I am sending this person, please give him something. So Narad Muni said, okay, I will write a recommendation letter. You go to Kuvera and he will give you. So he takes the letter, Narad Muni's letter, Narad Muni signed it, goes to Kuvera, shows him this letter, that your friend Narad Muni gave me this letter. And Kuvera said, okay, what do you want? I want some money, some wealth. Okay, how much do you want? He showed one pot. Please just fill this pot, whatever comes in this pot, that's all I want. So Kuvera said, that's all. So you just want the amount equal to whichever fill in this pot. So he called his servants, Kuvera, please give him the wealth equal to whatever fits in this pot. And these people, the servants of Kuvera, they started putting the gold, jewels, the pearls into that pot. As they're putting, it keep absorbing everything and never fills. They put everything. Ultimately, Kuvera's whole wealth is finished. Still this pot is empty. Now all the servants go to Kuvera. His pot is still empty. We became beggars ourselves. But his pot is not full. Kuvera also surprised. Let me see what this pot is. He did pot upside down. He asked that person, what is this pot? What is it made up of? He said, this pot is made up of human's mind. No matter how much you fill in this, how much you put in this, it's never full. The human desires are never fulfilled. I want this, I want that. You get one thing, then next thing. You get two bedroom house, then three bedroom. You got three bedroom, then four bedroom, then a big bungalow. You got a Chrysler, then you want BMW. So all that things going on, one after another. So there is no satisfaction at all. No matter how much you put in that, it's always empty. So this mind is always troubling us. How to pacify this mind? Is there a way to pacify this mind? Another example. Once a businessman, he was always desiring. I wish I had a Aladdin Kachirag. So that one genie will come out, as I rub the lamp, the genie will come out and I can ask him anything to fulfill all my desires. So one day actually he found Aladdin Kachirag. He got the genie, he got the lamp. As he rubbed the lamp, a genie appeared in front of him. Hukam mere aka. I am your servant, please tell me, what do you want? So this businessman, he became very happy. Finally, I got the genie. Now, fulfill all my desires. So his genie said, you have to engage me in the work all the time. If you keep me free, the same time I will eat you up, I will kill you. So this person said, no problem, I have so much work for you. I have so much pending work, I have so many offices, different cities, different parts of the world. My work is never going to finish, so no problem. She said, go to California, my office, 10 years work pending there. Go finish that work. So Ginny goes there, finishes all that 10-year pending work in 1 month and comes back. Okay, give me next work. Okay, go to New York, 20 years work pending in that branch. So Ginny goes there, finishes that 20-year pending work in 2 months and comes back. So this person is starting a little anxious now. Oh, what is happening? how to keep this genie engaged all the time. So, okay, go to Bombay, that branch also, 20 years of work pending. So, when genie went there, this businessman now is thinking what to do next, how to engage him in work next. So, this genie, as he's gone to finish that work, he is now so much anxiety, he finally goes to his guru. Now let me ask guru how to come out of this trouble. So sometimes people have guru only for this purpose. Please take me out of trouble, otherwise no value for guru to take him instructions to follow in day-to-day life. He goes to guru's ashram, please I am in this trouble, this genie, he has made my life hellish, if I don't keep him engaged he's going to kill me. So his guru said, see, what did I tell you? Don't be greedy. If you have this greed, your life is going to become hellish. So anyways, now we have to bring you out of this problem. So once the genie comes back, I will tell you what to do. So as the genie comes back, finishes that whole pending work in 1 month and comes back. So ask him, okay, what next? So this person, he asks genie, okay, now sit in the car, let's go. Puts him in his car and start driving, go to outside of the city to some farmhouse, his farmhouse. He asks the genie, dig a big hole in the middle of this farm, 10 by 10 miles. So the genie digs up the big hole there in seconds. Now put a bamboo in the middle of that hole. Genie puts a bamboo. So now this person says, now keep going up and down, up and down, up and down until I ask you to stop. So this genie is going up and down, finally this businessman got leave. So what the story emphasizes, we are like that businessman and our mind is always troubling us. One thought or another thought, this mind is like the genie. And how we can control this mind? This mind is always, if you do one task, it proposes you 10 million other tasks. Oh, you need to do this, you need to do that, you didn't do this yet. So mind is always troubling like that. How we can pacify this mind? So as this genie, he put the genie go up and down on the bamboo. So same way, the mind can be controlled when you start chanting the holy name. So this bead, just keep going round and round on the bead. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. As you keep chanting, going round and round the beads, this mind finally starts to pacify. This is how we can pacify this mind. In Sanskrit there is a word called, so man represents mind. Man trayate iti mantra. So everybody knows the word mantra also. So what does mantra actually mean? Man trayate iti mantra, which can pacify the mind. And in the Kali Yuga, the most powerful mantra, the chanting of the holy name, the Maha Mantra, is the chanting of Hare Krishna Mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So we have this five gross element, then this subtle element which is mind, and then intelligence. So in actual sense, this mind is supposed to control the senses, and intelligence is supposed to control the mind. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that superior than gross senses is the mind, superior than the mind is intelligence, and superior than the intelligence is the living entity, the soul. So intelligence is supposed to be superior than the mind and control the mind. But in our conditioned stage, it becomes upside down. The senses, mind control the intelligence and the senses control the mind. The senses demand, I want this. Ears want to hear some nice music. Eyes want to watch something nice videos. Mouth, the tongue want to taste some delicious food. So like that, the senses want to enjoy and they demand. And they tell the mind, okay, go get a degree, engage in our service. So the mind is always engaged in service of senses to fulfill the desire. How to make arrangement into satisfy the senses. And the mind control the intelligence. But In our actual sense, the intelligence should control the mind and the mind should control the senses. Our body is like a chariot. So this is again example given in the scripture itself. This body is compared to the chariot. And the horses in the chariot are like the senses. So the five horses shown here are like the five senses in this of the body. And these horses are controlled by the rein. So this mind is the rein which is supposed to control the senses. And the rein is held by the driver. So this intelligence is the driver who should control this mind, holding it on to this mind, so that the mind, the rein is held, the senses, the horses of this body does not go astray. And the passenger on this chariot, so the passenger on this chariot of the body is the living entity, the soul. So this body is the chariot, the senses are the horses, the mind is the rein, the intelligence is the driver holding on to the rein, and the passenger is the soul. So this chariot, this body is used to lead this living entity to a proper destination, to the best possible destination, to the ultimate goal of life. But if our intelligence is not strong enough, if it cannot hold the rein, so the rein in turn, the rein will not be able to control the horses. The horses will run in all different directions and will finally get into the ditch, lead this living entity into the hellish condition. So with the intelligence, we are supposed to control how to make the intelligence strong. Sometimes people ask this question, how to gain intelligence? And sometimes intelligence is related with memory power, remembrance. And how to gain the smarana shakti, remembering power. Because your intelligence is equivalent to remembrance. As long as you are able to remember, that is the use. If you cannot remember at that particular time, your intelligence doesn't support you. So how to make your intelligence or the remembrance sharp? So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, so sometimes people think intelligence, making intelligence stronger, sharper means kaju badam khao. Eat the almonds. Badam khaoge to dimag strong banega. The buddhi, the intelligence will be stronger. It may not be. Ultimately it depends on the subtle nature. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Tesham satta yukta nam bhajatam priti purvakam dadhami buddhi yogam tam yena mam puyanti te. When somebody engages in the devotional service, I give them the intelligence with which they can come to me, with which they can understand the things as they are. So if we really want to gain or make our intelligence stronger, the process is to engage in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord. Then Krishna shows the lamp of knowledge. With the lamp of knowledge, he drives away the ignorance, giving us the real intelligence. And then ahankar, what is the next subtle element? So we discussed mind, intelligence. The next element is false ego. So what is this false ego? When we say ego, I understand ego. But what is false? Is there something false and right ego also? What is ego?
I.
Ego means I, means identification. When I say I, it means identification, right? So ego, in one sense, it is identification. And false ego means to give false identification. When we identify ourselves with the false thing, when we identify ourselves with this body, oh, I am this body, I am such and such person, I have such and such profession, I am Indian or American, I am black or white, I am male or female. So that is bodily designation. when we identify ourselves with this external identification, designation, that is false identification, false ego. And the real identification is to know our real identity. And what is the real identity? I am not this body. I am the spirit soul who is occupying this body. So when we identify with the real person living inside the body, that is the real ego. So the ego is there. But identifying ourselves with the right object, right thing, that is the real ego. So the subtle elements are mind, intelligence and ego. Now when the body dies, or the so we understand the difference of the body. This body is made up of this 8 material elements, and we are something beyond this body. So when this body dies, when we say some such and such person is dead, so what happens to the soul or to the living entity who is occupying the body? So Krishna, when he starts describing the real identification, the first set of verses starting from 13th to 30th, chapter 2, he gives the knowledge of soul. Define the characteristics of the soul. What is the first thing Krishna describes? Dehino asmin yatha dehe komaram yovanam jara tatha dehantra praptir dhiras tatrana muhyati. As the living entity passes within this body from boyhood to youth to old age, similarly the soul passes into another body at the time of death. And a sober person is not bewildered by such change. So dehino asmin yatha dehe. So as the dehi within this deha, within this body, is continuously moving. So we had a childish body, and then we had a youth body, and then somebody may have a grown up older person, elderly body. So this body is always changing continuously. But the living entity within the body, the real person in the body, remains the same. Sometimes a person may be a 56 year old, but he may still feel like a child. Abhi to main jawan hu. People say, umar hai bachpan ki, dil hai bachpan ka. Right? So people, sometimes they still remain the same. And all the remembrance, they still carry all those remembrance. But if the body has changed, so there is something in the body who is still the same. So Krishna is giving this analogy to explain that we are continuous, this body is continuously changing, and the living entity, the soul within the body, remains the same, going through different phases. And as the body finishes, the living entity passes on to another body. And a sober person is not bewildered by such change. So what is the sober person here? What is the meaning of sober? Dhiras, the word, Sanskrit word uses dhira. So who is a dhira? So in common slang language, somebody, people may say sober person means they use in terminology of intoxication, drunk. Somebody may have a one peg, two peg, one beer, and person may say, oh, I'm still sober. After drinking two, I'm still sober. Because I'm able to maintain my consciousness. I'm not falling down. So that is how people use. So here, when Krishna uses the word dhira, dhira means sober person, because people in general are also under intoxication. Intoxication with false identification with this body. When we have too much of identifying with this body, that is bodily intoxication. And a person who is free from this intoxication, this bodily identification, he can understand these changes, these phases. That person leaving this body goes into another body, and he is not bewildered by this change. So what happens when the body changes? So when the body dies, the soul does not die. Na jayate mriyate va kadachin nayam bhutva bhavita va na bhuya ajo nitya shashvato yam purano na hanyate hanyamane sharire. When this body is killed, the soul is not killed. Na jayate, this soul never takes birth. Na mriyate, it does not die. It does not come into existence. did not come into existence at any particular point of time and will not come into existence. It ever existed. It is eternal. Nitya. Shashvato. Yam Purano. It is the oldest. So it is eternal. It is beyond death. So when the body dies, soul does not die. So that is the characteristics of soul. So when the body is finished, the soul continues and it moves on to another body. So how we understand the moving of soul from one body to another? So Krishna, that also Krishna explains with one very wonderful analogy. Krishna says, Vasamsi jirnani yatha vihaya navani grahanati naroparani tatha shrirani vihaya jirnani anyani sanyati navani dehi. As a person gives up the old garments and put on the new garments, similarly, the soul, giving up the old and useless body, accepts a new body. So everybody has this experience. When our clothes are worn out, or when your body size grows, that cloth does not fit anymore, we give up the old clothes and then put on the new clothes. Right? Is there anybody who is wearing his dress from the birth till now, the same dress? So as we give up the old clothes, put on the new garments, so same way the living entity, the soul, gives up one type of body and accepts a new body. Okay, so that part I can understand. But who decides what type of body will I get? So when I give up this particular life, I will get a new life. But who decides which life I will get? Is it my desire? Based on my desire?
Yeah.
Based on your desire? So somebody may desire, I want to be born in Tata Birla, Ambani's. So everybody will be born in Tata Birla, Ambani's family? So it's not just based on desire, there is another factor. So I explain it with always 2D. So 1D is desire, 2D is deserve. So there is desire and deserve. So we may have our desire, but there is another term which is deserve. How much we deserve. Based on both these combination, then we will be able to achieve the next destination. For example, if you go to buy a sari, so you have a desire to buy sari, right? So you go to the shop. Now shopkeeper may show you hundreds of different type of saris. He may show you cotton sari, Kanchivaram sari, silk sari, this, that. So yes, you have a desire to buy a sari. But what particular type of sari you will get depends on how much you have in your pocket. How much you deserve. He may show you a sari from 200 rupees to 2 lakh rupees. But what you will get is based on how much you have the capacity to pay. So same way, based on our activities, based on our consciousness, we develop certain type of desires. And to fulfill that desire, we get based on what we deserve. So there are 8.4 million species of life. So the scriptures explain, there are 8.4 million species of life, 84 lakh yoniya. It's not 8.4 million different entities, 8.4 million varieties. So there are millions of varieties as aquatic, there are millions of varieties as birds, millions of varieties as beasts, animals, and then there are 4 lakh varieties of human form of life. So sometimes we think human form of life means one particular variety. So there are 4 lakh different type of human or the human-like varieties. Like all these demigods, the Devi Devata, they also fall in the same category as a Jiva. And then Kinnara, Siddha, Nara, all those are different based on, it's not based on as a particular form, it's based on the level of consciousness. So these species are based on the level of consciousness. So if somebody has a desire to fly in the sky, so there are millions of different dresses available, millions of different varieties available. So one will get what type of particular dress one deserves. If somebody want to eat flesh, he has so much desire to eat meat. Okay, no problem, this human form is not suitable. Here you have to cut, chop, and you cannot digest properly. So you want to eat meat? Get a suitable body. A body of a beast. You can chop apart, rip apart the flesh of another entity and eat raw. Chew it. And what type of beast one will get, form one will get, depends on his quota, his deserve category. So based on desire and deserve, one can move around this 8.4 million species of life. So what somebody may still say, why the soul is not killed when the body dies? So if the body is killable and the soul is residing within the body, why the soul is not killed? So Arjuna also may have this question in the back of his mind. He may think, I am going to fight. If I am going to fight in this war, I am going to shoot the arrows. Maybe some arrow can pierce through the body and hit the soul also. Why the soul will not die? I am going to shoot the fire weapon. Maybe it can burn the soul. I am going to shoot the weapon to call the tornadoes. Maybe it can moisten the soul, drown the soul, or wither the soul. So Krishna explains, Nanam chindanti shastrani nanam dahati pavaka na chayanam kale dyanti apo na shoshyati maruta. The soul cannot be cut by any weapon. Nanam chindanti shastrani, nothing, no weapon can pierce through the soul. Nothing can cut the soul into pieces. Nanam dahati pavaka. It cannot be burned by fire. So this gross elements, anything made up of the gross elements, everything can be burned up. There are huge forest fire which can consume everything. The fire can consume the whole house, make it into ashes. But the soul cannot be burned by the fire. Na chayanam kale dyanti apo. It cannot be moistened by the water. If tsunami comes, it can destroy the whole big buildings. Can destroy everything. But the characteristic of the soul is, it cannot be moistened by the water and withered by the wind. Na shoshyati maruta. It cannot be withered by the wind. If a big tornado, big wind is blowing, high speed, it can destroy the big buildings. But the characteristic of the soul is, it cannot be withered by the wind. So somebody may still say, okay, soul is something different from the body. Soul does not die as the body dies. But how do I believe in soul? Saying is believing. Can you show me the soul? So to answer that question, Krishna describes the further characteristics of the soul. Avyaktoyam achintyoyam avikaryoyam uchyate. Tasma devam viditvayanam nanushochitum marhasi. Avyaktoyam achintyoyam. It is unconceivable. The soul is unconceivable. You cannot conceive the presence of soul with your material senses. Why is that? Is the soul so huge? Or what is the reason I cannot perceive the presence of soul, conceive the soul? So Shvetavatara Upanishad gives the description of the soul, the size of the soul. What is the size of the soul? So it says, Bala agra shatabhagasya shatada kalipitasya cha bhago jivasya vigyaja cha anatyat kalpate. So what is the size of the soul? If you take the tip of the hair, Bala agra. So take the tip of the hair, cut that tip of the hair into 100 pieces. So first of all, when you take the tip of the hair, it's also a vague term. How much is the tip? You take 1 millimeter, 2 millimeter, what is the tip of the hair? So take the tip of the hair, cut it into 100 pieces, then take one piece and further cut it into 100 pieces. That is the size of the soul. So that's why one cannot perceive the presence of soul. The soul is so tiny, which is still making this whole body animate. Without the presence of soul, this body is inanimate. And this soul is so powerful, it enters into the body of elephant. It enters through the elephant, it can make that whole giant body active. and the same soul into a small bacteria, it makes it bacteria active. So soul is so powerful, it can make anything active. So the presence of soul, it is hard to perceive. Then the next question comes, to further understand the presence of soul, I said we cannot perceive with our senses, our material senses. The reason why we cannot see the soul is not just the small size, it is its spiritual nature also. With our material senses, we cannot perceive the soul because it is spiritual in nature. It's not the material element. It's not the matter which we can see, touch, feel, sense through your material senses. So people may try to gain so much knowledge, but the most important knowledge, which is our own identification, who am I? One very first and foremost important question that people do not understand. And everybody talk about selfie. Today people want to take selfies. Everybody has iPhones, Samsung Galaxy, this, that, smartphones. And anywhere they go, they want to click. And what is the word used? Selfie. So people, everywhere they are taking selfie. So much selfie, but very little knowledge of the self. who is the self that people don't know? Everybody want to take selfie. So first we need to understand who is the self. Who am I? Because this human life of form, it is like a junction. So 8.4 million species of life, and getting a human form of life is a rare opportunity to gain, to attain the real happiness, to get out of the cycle of this birth, death, old age and disease. So that was the first session from where we started, search for happiness. And all these miseries are imposed upon us. We are keep going on in the cycle of birth, death, old age, disease, adi bhautik klesh, adi atmik klesh, adi devik klesh. All these miseries are imposed upon us. We are searching for happiness. People may be able to get little bit happiness here and there, but it is very flickering. The real happiness, how we can attain the real happiness? First, to understand who am I, what is my real identity. And getting this human form of life, it's like a junction in this 8.4 million species of life. Like a train, when a train goes into a particular station, there are some stations that are known as junctions. So now the station master may decide, a train may come from Bombay to Delhi. Now at Delhi junction, the station master will decide, this train further, now it will go to Kanyakumari, or it will go to Calcutta, or it will go to Bangalore. So that particular train may be sent. So now we have got the human form of life, it's like a junction. The activities we perform after getting this particular train, this particular vehicle, chariot, based on the activities we perform, based on that it's going to decide where this junction, this particular phase will move. Either are we going to go down into the lower species of life, or are we going to promote to the higher species of life? So the question comes, how to gain the real happiness, how one can attain real happiness? So first of all, telling somebody, yo, you are not this body, it's sometimes a big shock for people. Just as a cartoon shown here, person tells the lady, you know, you are not this body. What? We spend so much time taking care of this body. Right? People go to gym to build muscles, to make this body like a muscular body. We feed the body, take care of, dress up nicely. All the time, 24 hours, most of the time goes in taking care of the body. To take care of the needs of the body. But we are not, when you understand you are not this body, oh, all the time I'm just wasting my time. I'm spending the time which I am not. So once there was a lady, she got a nice bird, and she bought a nice cage to keep the bird. She put the bird into an iron cage, and she is cleaning the cage. This bird is making noise, chirping all the time. This lady thinks, oh, this bird is not happy here. Iron cage is not good enough. She buys a silver cage, transfer the cage, the bird from iron cage into silver, still cleaning up the cage every time, and this bird is still making a lot of noise. You think, oh, maybe it's still not happy. Puts the bird into a golden cage. The bird is still making a lot of noise, chirping all the time. He studded that golden cage with diamonds and all. Still the bird is not happy. She is all the time just cleaning the cage, decorating the cage. And finally one day the bird dies. So what she was doing is she is trying to take care of the external cage, but forgot to feed the bird inside the cage. That's why the bird inside the cage is hungry. And he is making noise. Feed me, feed me, feed me. Give me food. But the owner, she does not realize what is the real need for the bird. She is not looking for the nice decorated cage. He needs the real food. So same way, we are all the time taking care of this body. Sorry for Mataji's comment on Mataji. Spent so much time in the beauty parlors, manicure, pedicure, this, that. I even don't know all the terminologies. So he spent so much time. Hair start growing white, put the dye. Right? If the first wrinkle is seen on the face, oh, wrinkle lifting cream or something. So all the time, people are spending time in taking care of the body. Just the body, body, body. But we neglect the real self. That's why there is, people talk about so much selfie, 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 but there is little knowledge of the self. How to take care of the self, the real self within this body. So how the self, the living entity, can attain real happiness? As the body has a particular food, yes. Nowhere I am saying don't take care of the body. Yes, we have to take care of the body also. Because this body is a vehicle for us to achieve a higher destination. If we don't take care of the vehicle, if the vehicle stops on the middle of the highway, you are nowhere. So we have to take care of the body. So we have to feed the body, nourish the body, but not spend all the time just taking care of the body. So like a car, you may have a nice Mercedes, Ferrari. You may be cleaning up the car. But when you are traveling, you have to take care of the driver also. You have to feed the driver also. The car has its own food, the driver has its own food. You cannot put the food of the driver into the car or the food of the car into the driver. When the car runs out of gas, you cannot put a rasgulla, jalebi, samosa inside the, open the petrol tank cap and put the gulab jamun rasgulla inside. See, it will give the energy. So car has its own fuel, its own food. So similarly, when the driver gets hungry, you cannot say open the mouth and put the petrol tank pipe inside. Okay, here some fuel. So the driver has its own food. So same way, this body has its own needs, but the living entity who is occupying this body, who is the driver or the passenger within this chariot of the body, it has its own need. So how, while taking care of the body, we need to take care of the needs of the living entity, the soul. So how the soul can attain the real peace, real happiness? So once 5,000 years back, 80,000 sages assembled in Nameshwaranya for a 1,000-year long yajna. And as the sages were performing this yajna, one very advanced sage, very peaceful looking sage, approached there. His name was Suta Goswami. So all the sages approached Suta Goswami, all the sages of Nameshwaranya. They approached Suta Goswami, they asked him many questions. So in specific, they asked 6 questions. And one of the questions was, how the self, how the living entity can attain its real position of happiness. So in the original sense, the soul is Sat Chit Ananda, is full of bliss and eternity. But when the soul comes into this material world, its condition, as soon as it touches the material nature, it becomes conditioned. So in this conditioned state, we are imagining these pains and pleasure and going through all these imaginations. It's like a dream. So how the soul can attain real happiness? So Suta Goswami, answering the question to the sages, he says, Save punso paro dharma yator bhakti adhokshaje ahetuki apratihata yayatma suprasidati. So when the living entity takes it to its real dharma, real duty, the eternal religion, savai punso paro dharma. So there are two duties. One is apara dharma, one is para dharma. So one is the duties based on the bodily designation, and then the duty based on the real self, the real living entity. So based on the bodily designation, we identify, oh, I am such and such person, I have this job, I need to do this. But based on the living entity, we have our eternal duty. And that duty is to serve the Supreme Lord. Jiver savrupoye krishner nityadas. So in our real position, we are supposed to be in a position to serve the Supreme Lord. So savai pumso paro dharma yator bhakti adokshaje. So adokshaje means the Supreme Lord who is beyond our senses. And one's real eternal religion is to perform devotional service. And what kind of devotional service? Which will make the self real happy. Ahetuki apratihata. Yayatma suprasiditi. It will make the living entity real, peaceful and happy. So ahetuki. What is ahetuki means? Which is unmotivated. Not beyond, free from our personal self-motivations. That, oh, I will do something. What is in it for me? And then apratihata, which is unstoppable. So today I am just giving a small glimpse of what is the real position of the living entity and what we are supposed to do to attain real peace, real happiness. But later on we will discuss in more practical sense as practical spirituality. Sometimes as the word spirituality comes, when somebody hears a word, oh, we should take to spirituality, immediately the thought comes, oh, I have to give up everything. Give up my life, my family, everything, become Babaji. And that is the meaning of practicing spirituality. So what does spirituality really mean? In today's world, how to practice spirituality, practical ways. So that we'll discuss in a separate session. So today I was just giving a glimpse. We are not the body, we are the spirit soul. I am not my body, I am not my mind. I am something which is residing in the body. As we have the need for the body, there is need for the spirit soul. And the spirit soul's need is to engage in the devotional service of the Lord. So I will finish it with one story, a bedtime story. So once a king, he came to know, I am going to die very soon. As he heard this news, I am going to die, he had four queens. So he went to his first queen, whom he liked the most, with whom he spent the most time, took care of that queen very nicely, always fulfilling all his needs and desires. He goes to the queen, tells her, now I came to know I am going to die very soon. When I die, will you come with me? And the first queen said, no way, I have my life. When you die, yes, I will be a little upset, I will cry. But the first queen actually said, I even don't care. Doesn't matter to me. As soon as you go, I will find somebody else. The king was very disappointed. What is this? I took care of her so nicely all my life. Spent most of my time taking care of her. And she says, as soon as you go, I will find somebody else. So disappointed, he goes to the second queen. Tells her same thing. I'm going to die very soon. Will you come with me? Say, I took care of you so nicely. The queen said, yes, you took care of me nicely, you fulfilled all my needs and desires, spent a lot of time with me. Even not taking, giving priority to some of your other important things. So yes, when you die, maybe I will come to the cremation ground, I will be sad for some time, but ultimately life has to go on. I will go with my life. The king again disappointed, goes to the third queen. The third queen again, yes, he took care of the third queen also nicely. Maybe not as much as other things. So told the same thing. I'm going to die. Will you come with me? So third queen also said, you know what? You cared for me so much, provided for me all the time. I'm very grateful to you. I will be very sad. I will cry. I will be sad for months and maybe occasionally I will remember you. But ultimately life has to go on. So king further disappointed. he did not have the courage to go to the fourth wife, fourth queen, because the fourth one king had always neglected, even though the fourth queen always took care of all the needs of the king, taking care of his food, his clothing, his rest, his everything, whatever he needed, he provided for the king. But king always neglected her. So, but as the king was trying to turn and go away, without even approaching the fourth queen, he heard a voice from the back. Yes, I will come with you. And as the king turned, it was the fourth queen, whom king has always neglected. So, in our life also, we have these four queens. Everybody is the king, and they have these four queens. Some people may get happy. Now I got four queens. Somebody may be hitting their head. I was not able to handle one, now four. How come? So what are these four queens? So the first queen here represents our wealth, our property, the bank balance, the house. So everybody spends so much time taking care of all these property, bank balance and all these things. And we give so much priority to all these things, sometimes neglecting other things, sometimes neglecting our own bodily needs also, sacrificing our rest, running behind these things. People are working one job, night shift, second job. So, always caring for this thing. And when a person dies, this house, this car, this bank balance even doesn't come to the cremation ground. Somebody else will claim this property. The next day somebody else will own these things. So that is the first wife, and we give so much priority to that. And then second wife, who is the second wife here? So second wife is our social circle. So we give so much emphasis to the social circle. Always thinking of, oh, if I do this, what the others will think of me? What my friends will say? What my neighbors will say? So we are always trying to show off to others, imitating, not taking care of our real needs, just to think, oh, what will others think of me? If my child goes to this particular college, what my neighbor will think? Oh, he was not able to pay, he had to send his son to this third class college. Oh, he is buying this third class car. So people are always trying to jump up to fulfill others' expectations. And so when somebody dies, all this friend circle, this colleagues, this social circle, people may cry, they may come to the cremation ground, few hours, few minutes, they may cry, and after that they are in their own life. How many times, how long people remember others? But we are spending so much time, giving so much priority to those things. And then the third wife, who is the third wife here? Third wife is our close family. Somebody's spouse, kids, parents, all that. So we spend time with them, we take care of them. But sometimes we give preference to our social circle more than our family. Pressurizing them also to do the things which others will like about them. So when somebody passes away, somebody dies, yes, the family is sad, family is upset. They will feel the person, the absence of that person, they will remember him, and once a year they will observe his anniversary. But ultimately, the life continues. The people will learn to live, conduct their lives. And who is the fourth wife here? I myself am the soul. Soul is living. Right? So, see, sometimes the bodily designation is so deep rooted in us, we think, I am this body, I have a soul. It's actually other way. I am the living entity, I have this body. We are not experiencing the body, or we are not having humans experiencing spiritual reality. We are the spirit beings experiencing the bodily realm. So I am myself the soul. So when the soul is living, that is the king, right? Here in this example. So who is the fourth queen here? So the fourth queen is Paramatma, living in the heart of every living entity. So Krishna says, Sarvasya Chaham Hridaye Sannivishto. Krishna is also situated in everybody's heart as Paramatma. watching, witnessing all the activities, waiting for person to turn towards him. And he is maintaining us throughout our activities. But we are always neglecting. We are always neglecting the Supreme Lord. We are always neglecting the Paramatma in the heart. Just going around with our life. So busy with our activities. And Paramatma, when the living entity goes from one body to another, he comes. He is in every living entity, in every species of life. He is the most dear friend. So our friend may leave us. If the person loses all his wealth, the friends may turn his back. The friend may leave the person. But Krishna, no matter if somebody is a wealthy person or he becomes a dog or an ant, Krishna is always there. Associating, giving the association, waiting for the person to turn toward him. But we are always neglecting. So, after getting the human form of life, the real goal of life is to turn to Krishna, say yes to Krishna, so we can attain the real purpose, real goal of life. Otherwise, we are just busy with all our activities. People saying, oh, I am busy with this thing, that thing, just going with our daily chores and giving the no priority to the real self. So after understanding, I am not this body, I am the soul, we need to understand further how I can make my life successful, how I can cut down the cycle of birth, death, old age, disease, this cycle of miseries which are imposed upon me unwillingly. How can I come out of that cycle? So the next question comes further, why the miseries are imposed upon us? Right? Sometimes somebody may think, oh, I'm such good person. I have never done anything wrong, anything bad in my life, as long as I can remember. Why I have to suffer? Why some problems are there in my life? So we'll stop here. And that is next topic. Why do bad things happen to good people? Or vice versa sometimes. Sometimes people may be very nasty and they're enjoying. And people think, oh, he's such a nasty person. And he has all the wealth, all the riches, all the facilities, all the luxuries. Why me? Why I have to suffer? So the next topic is, why do bad things happen to good people? So thank you very much. If anybody has any question or comment. Any question, comment, if I spoke anything wrong or spoke something too hard, please forgive me. Intention is not to point at anybody, it's just to bring us to the real understanding based on the scriptures, which is the real authority for any knowledge. So no questions, we'll stop here. Thank you very much. So we'll continue with the next phase of the program. Will have all the kids come down, sing Narsimha Prayer.